This episode is brought to you by Midwest Bitcoin Summit.
Today, I'm joined by Sergey Gerasimovich, founder of Easy Blockchain, a company working at the intersection of Bitcoin mining, energy infrastructure, and the future of compute. Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you finding time to host me here.
Yeah, for sure. It's really exciting to talk about, your journey into Bitcoin, into what you're working on right now, into flared gas, into Bitcoin mining and being able to reuse energy, and into AI and how the future looks as far as energy usage and whatever else you want to talk about. But can you first let us know a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, there's a lot to unpack, I believe, but about me, Sergey Gerasimovich, founder of Easy Blockchain. Easy Blockchain is a Bitcoin mining company. I'm originally from Ukraine, based out of Chicago now. Been running this business for a few years. We have projects across the United States and multiple states. We have South Carolina, Georgia, Kansas, Texas. Today, the business is a little bit different than it was years ago. First, we started as a distribution company of the compute. We were selling GPUs, ASIC miners, and then we became a modular data center developer, then operator. Then we started manufacturing modular data centers. And then kind of spin through a few years, we were even power generation company. And right now, I think in a nutshell, we are a distributed compute provider. And that is also something that we are kind of striving to become, not only for Bitcoin mining, but we want to be a provider of compute for AI data centers. But the core of our business is still Bitcoin mining. And it is a business that we started with, and it's the business we're continuing to grow.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting, because the main part of the business is Bitcoin, but the transition into AI, because I hear a lot of Bitcoiners being interested in AI. Why is that?
I think it's margins and it's a predictability of the business. Lots of Bitcoin mining companies specifically that were publicly traded, they pivoted into AI data centers because they had to provide a better forecast in profitability for the investors. That is on public level. That also kind of is the same model in a private level. Because at the end of the day, the business has been very volatile in the last few years. We have been hoping for a better market conditions after the halving. Now we're 2 years in for the previous halving, and the next halving is coming very soon, and we're still in the very depressed market conditions. So I think when you look into Bitcoin mining as a business, you really do not know what's going to happen tomorrow, even though Bitcoin still has its positive effects. You know, we still have inflation. Bitcoin is still a scarce asset. Fundamentally, nothing has changed about Bitcoin. But the capital has been sucked out from risky assets such as cryptocurrency and going to AI, which is another risk asset. But that asset is still more predictable. I mean, you can see SpaceX going public, and they now kind of claim themselves not being a rocket company, but more like a high data center company. So I think projected revenue, projected profits is something that people are looking more into. And unfortunately, of course, Bitcoin's volatility, it kills the infrastructure business, and it's very hard to grow that business as we are nowadays.
So how does an AI data center make a profit, and does the flared gas emissions that people use that excess energy to mine Bitcoin with, does that play a role in the AI data center as well?
Oh, it does. It does. Well, so there are a couple of things, right? The AI data centers they're kind of similar to Bitcoin mining farms, right? Bitcoin mining farm, it's just a building where the power is interconnected. AI would be the same. The compute that is in those buildings is different. For Bitcoin, those are going to be the ASIC miners. For AI, there's going to be GPUs. And right now, both of those industries kind of competing with each other. So Bitcoin mining's business, a final product is Bitcoin. For AI, the final product is compute. So the way you make money in Bitcoin mining, you make a Bitcoin and you just sell it on the market. In compute, you have to sign a customer for a long-term lease. Mm-hmm. So when you sign a customer for a long-term lease, your final product is kind of like a lease, right? It's this real estate transaction. So it's less risky, so they say. This industries are still very similar because they both rely on energy and they both rely on cost inputs of energy. Back in the day in 2018, my company has pivoted into power generation. We've done Bitcoin mining on flare gas. The reason to that was because we were looking for cheaper power. So right now, what you can see that AI data centers are doing similar things, but they are signing leases on land where there is a lot of natural gas, and they just build their own power generation plants next to their AI data centers. Actually, as a matter of fact, today, Chevron has announced that they are signing a deal. I think it's with Meta or Microsoft, someone big, that they're going to build a natural gas power plant somewhere in West Texas. So the similarities are similar here that everyone wants to control the inputs of power. But both businesses, of course, require capital. And unfortunately, still with Bitcoin mining, that capital is very hard to find because you can't really take a loan in the bank. But with AI data centers, because of the final product being a compute and a lease, the banks are more comfortable to financing those projects.
And what is it that is most, is it the memory that it provides the compute? Is it you're giving them storage as far as the GPUs? What is the main, is it memory? Is it speed? Is it energy? Is like, what's the main component of that?
Yeah. So there are multiple stacks in this business, right? Like, for example, the first foundation would be energy. That's the power, the one that you, me use on the grid that we turn on the switches, the power flows and our computers run. Same as in a data center. First would be the power stack. So it's the foundation. Next one going to be like some infrastructure. That will be a facility, a building. In a crypto world, that would be a modular data center in the form of container. But in AI data center, that will be more like a traditional building. So the next stack would be actual physical computer. In Bitcoin mining, that would be ASIC miner. That's just a computer, in other words, which does one specific job. And its job is to look for to solve the puzzle, to look for or like repeat and copy blockchain where Bitcoin will come as a reward. In AI data center, there will be a GPU, graphic processing unit, or a different type of a form of a computer. Both of those computers will be installed on the rack, in the shelf, and power are going to be interconnected. Well, what happens next? That's a little bit more complicated because in Bitcoin mining, those computers are going to run a blockchain, and as final product, going to be Bitcoin. In AI data center world or AI world, someone else has to run program on top of those GPUs. For those programs, you need a little bit more sophisticated software. For the software, you would need to use memory. We have had this crazy run in memory chips, and because the more compute requires to produce, the more computing requires to produce of intelligence, let's say, you do need to have a memory, which is traditional memory that we would have in our computer. But in general, in a nutshell, those are very similar businesses. Those businesses are pretty, pretty similar. And at the end of the day, these are the computers that run on the shelves. The only difference there is, of course, the cost. The GPUs for AI are more expensive than ASIC miners for Bitcoin. But so is the final product, right? me and you most likely and the audience have used ChatGPT. It costs money to create that line of code, and that line of code cost consists of power, of renting a data center, and buying the GPUs.
Okay, so yeah, I was interested in that because I am a fan of scarcity, and I'm a fan of Bitcoin because of its scarcity. And I invest, how your company is primarily Bitcoin, but you are moving into AI. But I also, my main source of savings and investment is Bitcoin. But I am curious always about scarcity. So when I heard a few years ago about the scarcity of chips and producing memory chips, I heard about semiconductors. So I was interested in investing in a semiconductor company just for fun. I just wanted to like have some, just because I thought it was interesting what I was reading about it. Mm-hmm. So, and I never look at those, you know, stocks, because I don't, it's again, mainly Bitcoin in my life, but I looked at it recently and I saw that one of them surged a huge amount, and it was just a tiny bit that I bought, but it's worth so much now. And I thought, what is this company again? Because I couldn't even remember why I bought this thing, and now it's worth a lot. So I was looking into it, and it is a memory chip, or they provide memory to these semi, I guess it's considered a semiconductor. Again, I didn't take a huge deep dive into it, but I was curious on what's happening in this space. Is there a shortage of it, or is it because there's so much compute being built in these data centers that they just need? There's a scarcity, I guess.
The Midwest Bitcoin Summit is coming up this September in Columbus, Ohio. Get your tickets today, because this year's summit is shaping up to be a major moment for Bitcoin in the Midwest. Visit MidwestBTC.com or click the link in the description to get your tickets.
Where we are today is that the data center itself needs so many different components, right? It needs electricians, it needs electrical components, it needs transformers, it needs generators. And then that's the first level, remember? And then the second level, where the computers come in, those computers, I mean, we call them as simple GPUs, but those computers have thousands of different components in them. And if one component is delayed, then the whole computer cannot work. This craze with the memory has become a kind of phenomena because, you know, semiconductor stocks, they are now being traded as a meme stocks, right? Like people kind of drive that volume of trading and then buy those stocks. But if you take a look at the earnings level, those earnings level are not so high compared to the valuation of the companies. And the same we can say about SpaceX, for example, which we mentioned on this podcast already. SpaceX revenue is like, I think it's $8 to $18 billion. I think it's $18 billion, but the company is worth over $2 trillion. Yeah. So if you take a look at similar companies, like Walmart's revenue is $700 something billion, and the company is three times cheaper. So wow. Like right now, economics drill doesn't really work, right? People make decisions emotionally, and at the end of the day, right now, there's this, I think that it's one of the stocks that went crazy in pricing was SanDisk. SanDisk makes memory chips, and it went up. So scarcity has the game to play here, but I think it's also hype. And hype what is kind of influencing it. Unfortunately, I'm using this word pretty often in this conversation, but unfortunately, like, we live in the world right now where memes, bets kind of dominating our life. I'm even reading Wall Street Journal every other day, and it says the probability of something happening according to Polymarket is this. So like, we all live in probabilities right now. Mm-hmm. We see what's going to happen tomorrow. We want to make a bet, and it's weird. I think it's a drastic change since the pandemic, because when people went staying at home during the pandemic, they had so much extra time, and they were making bets on stocks, they making bets on sports, and now it's become a part of a culture.
Yeah, and I'm very curious about that too, which is something that I don't condone normally. Like, I think it's okay for fun. Okay, if people are just betting for fun, but I couldn't believe, I don't log into Coinbase often, but when I went into Coinbase and I saw all of the betting that you could bet on anything, like it's not even sports, it's just anything. You could just bet. I couldn't believe this gambling culture that's become so mainstream. And it's not just Coinbase. Every ad you see on TV is DraftKings, this, and everything is just betting. So you're right. Everybody's speculating on 100 things. What do you think about the fact that Bitcoin, again, the price is so low, people are speculating on memory, and this is because I didn't think of it that way. Instead of just scarcity, it's becoming almost like this bet and this overhyped, you know, it's not really there. Like the valuation isn't there. It's just the hype in the markets. But what happens when people realize that Bitcoin is this actual scarce thing and the hype actually comes into Bitcoin? Because then it won't be what it's actually worth. Technically, it'll be the speculation on Bitcoin that isn't here yet, really.
I think this is a very deep question, because the Bitcoin price and Bitcoin fundamentals are kind of a sacred topic for me. I think in terms of like Tron says is short, what's going to happen? I think that people are going to lose money when all this hype going to be over, and SanDisk and all other chips companies, a lot of people are going to lose money. That's the problem for Bitcoin, because the people who lost money have no money to invest. Bitcoin has been traded as a speculative asset. However, the whole goal of a recent goal of Bitcoin community has been creating this thesis about Bitcoin being the hard asset, being a digital gold, being an asset scarce, being an asset that you can carry in your pocket billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And I think the community has lost track somewhere there. Bitcoin got very much mixed with the rest of the crypto, and it lost its path. The community lost its path, and it attracted at the beginning of this kind of hype cycle, it attracted a lot of people who just bet, and then they were betting on Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin was not providing those returns, so they started betting on those meme coins or other coins or other coins. And of course, they mostly all lost money. And now, if they lost money in crypto, they don't want to come back to Bitcoin because Bitcoin is a crypto, right? So they don't want to come back into Bitcoin because they're going to say, oh, we already lost money in crypto, why would we going to invest in Bitcoin? But if we have separated Bitcoin as an asset class and didn't, I don't know, promote this cryptocurrency theme, get rich quick, I think we would be in a very different place.
Right.
Right now, we're in a very tough place as a community, from mining perspective, completely horrible. But I think as a community, we're in a tough spot because we have lost the path. Mm-hmm. First, there was first Satoshi, first white paper, it's a digital cash. We lost that game. Then the community has created this game of Bitcoin being a digital gold. I think we're losing that game. And the third thing, like who's going to play, who's going to create a new vision? Who will actually drive Bitcoin out of this tough spot where we are in? I think that answer to the question is still going to be up there. It needs more discussion.
Well, that's why it's nice to still see some exchanges that are Bitcoin only, places like River and, you know, Strike and Cash App that have that ethos and try to separate Bitcoin from everything else. And they're not providing all of these altcoins, because that's what I think confuses people when you first get into Bitcoin and you start seeing Coinbase and it has 1,000 other hundreds of like so many coins that you just start thinking, are all these the next Bitcoin? And people get so confused. I think these companies just figure, if other people are going to do it, we should also provide it as an option because we have to compete. But why? I mean, I think that's just toxic. You know, that's just not a good road for Bitcoin. And it just lumps it all together with all this other stuff. And it's not the same. So it is nice that some companies are still sticking to it and not you know, diluting themselves with other cryptocurrencies. But yeah, I wish that that would, I think it's eventually going to, people will see, you know, that Bitcoin is different. And I just, I don't know what will happen. It'll just always be a casino, I guess. I think just like how this gambling is becoming so mainstream, and this is a normal part of life, it seems. It's like people gamble on the stock market, like we said, with these, you know, memory chips and all this stuff. But then they're gambling on crypto and they gamble in Vegas, and it's just part of culture. But it's like Bitcoin isn't the gamble, it's the money savings, you know.
Agree. 100% agree with you on that. 100% agree. And well, at the end of the day, it may sound strange, but I think lack of regulation what led us here, and that's where we are. Uh-huh. And if there was more regulation from the government, we would be in a better place. Because lack of regulation and giving up on this industry led to lots of scams, lots of new coins, pump fund websites where people just kind of scamming each other and making fun of it on Twitter. And that led us to the stage where lots of people lost money. And the real use cases out of crypto, honestly, are exchanges, which, is it a use case? It's existed before. Exchanges existed before. But I think another one would be stable coins, which I think is a good use case. But we're still losing this use case on Bitcoin. The asset class which can compete with gold, that battle has been lost. The war may not have been, but the battle itself was lost. It attracted a lot of believers that, you know, big money, BlackRock, you know, Mark Cuban, lots of popular old school money was coming into this industry. And there was a moment where we thought, aha, we finally won. And then again, cryptocurrency got mixed up with Bitcoin and it became one of the thing that just people don't want to touch, and it's become very toxic. I do see the path out. I think that path out will happen with a new regulation, with this Clarity Act. I think Clarity Act will ban a lot of cryptocurrency. And I'm going to be the last person who would ask the government to ban something. But I think at this point, there's no other choice. At this point, there's no other choice, because you were going to keep having investors being scammed and money being laundered. I mean, it's so hard for legitimate businesses to actually survive.
Right. I'm glad that you said that, because, again, I think that the government is, you know, they did take a long time with this. They didn't ban anything, or they didn't ban anything or do it up until this point. So hopefully now that they make some moves. But a lot of people ask me, knowing that I'm a Bitcoiner, what I think of the Clarity Act. And I haven't looked into it much, because I say I really don't care, because it's not going to affect Bitcoin, because I just think that Bitcoin will still be Bitcoin. It's not like they're going to stop it, you know. But I love that aspect of it, where it'll at least get rid of those things where people won't continue getting stolen from and hurt, you know. But then it's also kind of like the point where is there ever a cap? I mean, at least that's going to happen in the crypto space. So that makes that a safer place than when you think of the stock market and all of these, you know, penny stocks and, you know, stocks where people are overhyping and they're overselling shares for valuation they don't have. So it's kind of like, that is also something that in my mind should be a bit more regulated than just selling unlimited shares to something just because there's demand. There's literally no cap on it, where at least Bitcoin has one.
Well, I think the shares that you're comparing is more, that case is more relevant when you talk about this other meme, other coins. I wouldn't call them meme coins, but other coins. At the end of the day, those stocks they are still regulated by the SEC. So if there is some fraud, if fraud is being committed, the government will have a jurisdiction to oversee that, and they will be able to prosecute someone. You know, in the cryptocurrency world, there was thesis that we're going to just prosecute without rules. And that's what happened during the previous administration. And there was no rule writing at all. During this administration, there has been an attempt at least to write the rules. You're absolutely right that Bitcoin is going to stay the Bitcoin. But that idea that is still part of cryptocurrency casino is so hard to clean up, and that it will be so hard to kind of take it out of the minds of the people, right? And that's unfortunately a problem. Like, I recently took a look at the investment potential that could have been if you invested in Bitcoin a year ago. If you invested in Bitcoin a year ago, you would have lost 38% of your money. If you invested in SAP 500, you would have made 27% on the money. So now, like, I'm as an investor, I'm sitting here and I have to think about it twice, right? And I'll have to think about, do I invest in a safe SAP 500, the basket of 500 best companies in the United States, which are essentially best companies in the world, or do I invest in unknown crypto casino Bitcoin? As an investor who have never done this research, who doesn't have this much belief into Bitcoin, who doesn't believe who does believe into scarcity, who believes into the money has to be free, right? If I'm that person, like, I'm probably going to choose SAP 500. But the problem what we have today is that Bitcoin's all features are not working. And that's the worst, that Bitcoin has become a part of the casino versus a safe asset that we all hoped for. But the features fundamentals didn't go anywhere. We're still there. Right. We're still there. It's still a safe asset.
Yeah, because you're right about the way that people have been, you know, having PTSD about this entire thing. Because even when I hear regular people day to day talk about Bitcoin to me, they're under this assumption and they have it stuck in their minds. Because again, when this big crash happened in, I don't know if it was 2022, I forget. They tell me, oh yeah, Bitcoin, that FTX stuff. And they just associate it with what media was pushing. And like, they don't talk about Bitcoin much on media, but that was a story everyone heard. Sam Bankman-Fried, and they think of Bitcoin as that. And they're just, that's what people have. And that's hard to break that idea, because that's all they saw. And that's what they think the news is about Bitcoin. But when do you, as an investor and as, you know, easy mining, and when you were, you know, doing the data center, providing compute and everything and focusing a little on AI or a lot on AI at this point, but when do you flip? Because when you talked about people getting hurt, as far as even the stock I bought that I'm saying is so high and everything, and it's overhyped and stuff like that, when do you start seeing that, okay, the S&P is a safe haven, but then at some point people have to break free of that PTSD they had about Bitcoin when other things start to deflate, I guess?
I think that if you ask me about, well, the time when this happens, I think it will happen in 2028, after 2028, because after that next halving. That's the halving where the Bitcoin mining rewards will be really, really scarce. So it will be not that much emission. So that's number one. Number two, I think this AI craze and AI investments, they're still overvalued, and there will be some, pullbacks, crash. I don't know if I would say crash, pullbacks. And that's people when we'll start thinking about holding the money, not for making the return of 20% tomorrow, but making the return of 20-30% in the next decade, you know? Oh, well, not like 20-30% every year in the next decade. I think that's the next time when it's going to happen. The third thing, I think when younger population, people who are who are teenagers right now, 13, 15, 16, will become investors. This is the group of people who will probably never gonna ever invest in gold. Mm-hmm. And I think that's that time when this generation will start investing, and that will be in the next decade when the older money gonna retire and that money will be passed along to generation. That's the baby boomers money. And that's the next decade. And that's trillions of dollars that will be passed along into generation. And next generation will be people in their 40s, 50s. And that generation still going to be playing safe. But generation after, people, well, in 30s, but then people who are in like 20s and still teenagers, they will only going to be investing in analog of Bitcoin, analog of gold, and that would be Bitcoin. And I think that's when the Bitcoin market cap will become in trillions. We're talking about, you know, $5, $7, $8, $10 trillion. And that's when the population itself going to hold, the major part of our population going to hold Bitcoin in their portfolio as an asset class they want to hold for a long time. And instead of gold, they will be holding Bitcoin. So, I mean, I'm not the one who's going to tell you you're going to become rich tomorrow, but if on a long term, we're talking about next probably 5 to 10 years, then it's when I think Bitcoin will, you know, resurrect from this crypto casino and becomes an asset class of its own.
Yeah, also, that's definitely what I agree with. I think that seems very logical as how things would kind of play out, especially with that new generation of investors moving into the space. The other thing I think is that for the S&P being the safe investment asset right now, where you're saying, or not you're saying, but just happens to be that Bitcoin is down 30% on the year and S&P is up almost that much. But when I think back to when I first got in, started learning about Bitcoin and learning how much money was printed in that four-year period from COVID and on, and then finding out about inflation and how much money printing accelerates and doesn't just continue at a steady pace, it just keeps expanding exponentially. So then I think about that too, as far as how much people can buy now with dollars as far as Bitcoin, and that amount of Bitcoin always stays that amount of Bitcoin. But then the returns that people are making us are a certain dollar amount, but that dollar is worth less and less and less. So it's kind of like there's a flippening that I just feel is like eventual.
It is eventual. The question is when, right? Mm-hmm. And seems like the printing doesn't stop. I don't think it's going to stop. I mean, look at this even Doge initiative, right? The Department of Government Efficiency. I mean, it was just a big PR stunt. They haven't done anything. Even though they say, well, we're gonna do it all. We're going to cut the spending. And yeah. Elon was pumping himself in the chest and say, oh, I'm going to do it. And they haven't done anything, right? Well, why? Because it's practically impossible to do it. You can't just kill this much of, you can't get rid of trillions of dollars of worth of spending because the country's so big, economy is so big. Well, now they say a new story, the growth, that's a solution, right? Well, now it's growth of the solution and they're going to pump that story like, oh, now the growth of the solution. But at some point, there are going to be some events, some trigger events that may start actually cascading and the inflation going to be out of control. Like look at this right now. We have a new Fed Reserve chairman, Darren Walsh. And when Trump appointed him, the whole goal was that he's going to start cutting rates. So economy isn't running even more, right? Well, now he came in and he is a very smart guy. He's a very smart guy, rich guy. He came in. Now he got a position. You know, it's like the job interview. You're going to say anything you want, but when you got a job, you just do it. So he's like said anything he wanted to get a job. And now he's in. He's like, holy cow, inflation is running hot. We probably need to start cutting rates, not cutting rates. We're going to start raising rates. So now his inclining is that he's going to raise rates in the end of this year. Well, economics is economics. My point, why kind of I'm telling all this story? Because I think it's like, you're absolutely right. That kind of all this media talking points is like, well, you know, like everything is cool. Everything is great. It's true. But inflation is still persistent. And if there will nothing going to be done to it, I mean, those Uber trips are going to cost you a couple hundred bucks. I mean, my Uber trip, sometimes I go from the airport, it's already costing 100 something bucks. Mm-hmm. So my point is like, yeah, inflation is here and right. it's huge. And so if you buy in a stock for a dollar and the stock even goes up, so it's even more inflated. So that means the market is more inflated. But at some point you will need to have that scarce asset. So far we have two players. That's what? Gold and that's Bitcoin. So right. Bitcoin would be taking its place, but we do need a better PR campaign. It has to be better. I mean, who is the main PR person of Bitcoin right now? In your opinion?
I don't know. All I think is that it's the whole sailor thing with the let me build a machine and give people a higher interest rate than their bank is offering off of the dividends and stuff. And I have a machine built into Bitcoin. That's what I think is. He's kind of the voice, but it's not like he's trying to get the majority of TradFi into buying Bitcoin. He wants to get them out of that, you know, traditional finance, but into getting a yield off of Bitcoin, you know, and just, you know, so I think he's the major voice right now.
Yeah, and I agree with you. That's, I expected this answer. So he is a major voice, but reality is his thing doesn't really work. I mean, right now, what strategy has done, or big, like MicroStrategy has done, it just put a huge pressure on Bitcoin because now they hold a massive chunk of Bitcoin in their portfolio and the stock is not doing well. And since he raised debt, this debt payments have to be paid. I mean, he still used fiat, right? Like, I mean, he can pump himself in the chest forever, but he used US dollars to buy Bitcoin. And now the company is in trouble, huge trouble. So if he's going to start selling Bitcoin, and he did a little bit recently, and the whole market all freaked out, right? Well, if you're going to start selling this Bitcoin, or God forbid there is a bankruptcy, I mean, this whole thing going to just explode. So, but my point is, what I'm trying to say is, like, if Michael Saylor is the only voice that Bitcoin community has, then we're in trouble. Because because Michael Saylor is a sales guy. He sells the story. He sells the story and gets rich by himself by selling his stock. In reality is, Bitcoin hasn't been built for guys like Michael Saylor. He was a billionaire before Bitcoin. Bitcoin has been built for people who are victims of a traditional financial systems. Bitcoin has been built by Satoshi Nakamoto as a form of digital cash after 2008 crisis. That's when it got built. It was not built. It was not built to use the same financial system to crack Bitcoin again, right?
Yeah, you made me think of something crazy.
Yeah, right.
I thought about. Yeah. Obviously, this is just a crazy thought that's not reality, but I'm just like.
Oh, we can talk about conspiracy, all conspiracies you want.
Okay. So this is a fun. I like doing this. I don't get to do it too much. But Michael Saylor, we know he always said, never sell your Bitcoin.
Yes.
You know, so he's got personal Bitcoin, but then he has the company's Bitcoin. What if his whole play is like, let me just keep doing the strategy stuff until something breaks over there? And like, you know what I mean? Like maybe he's trying to like throw a wrench in the system and then he still has Bitcoin. So he's fine on his personal side.
Well, so you know what my opinion about this? I don't want to be going to be a party pooper, but I think there's no big plan there. I think the plan is simple. You take cheap cash from investors, you pump your stock, you sell some of your personal stock in your US dollars and buy a bigger yacht. You know, the Michael Saylor's yacht is like 150 feet. It's one of the biggest yachts in Miami Beach. So like, you know, and God bless him, by the way. It's like he earned that money. It's his. God bless him. You know, it's like perfect. My point is still that Bitcoin as an asset class was not created for guys like him. And was not created by guys like him. It was created by Satoshi Nakamoto. Many people think it's Hal Finney. Many people think who knows what it is. But at the end of the day, it was created by a simple guy to take care of a simple people. Right. And the people who got behind the system. And since 2009, we are in 2026, 17 years later, we still have that problem. That problem is actually even bigger. The problem is even bigger. Not a lot of people have access to financial systems. You know, the You know, in America, I mean, we live in America. I'm originally from Ukraine. And I remember when the money they made, they had to convert that money, local currency, into US dollar, because the inflation was so out of craziness that they may have lost all of its money. And they did lose it many times. So that's kind of the whole world. Well, now in Ukraine, it's different. This financial system is better. Unfortunately, there's a war, but the systems is better. But there are other countries. There are billions of people who don't have access to bank accounts, right? And Bitcoin allows them to do that, allows them to have the access to financial system, and allows them to save.
Allows them to save.
I mean, here in the United States, you can have 401k, you can have Fidelity account, you can have so many, many different things, right? It's the most sophisticated, developed financial system in the world. But it's only 300 million people who have access to it. I mean, maybe it's a little bit more, right? But then the rest of the world doesn't have it. Look at India, billions of people. I mean, they're kind of growing. But my point is like, Bitcoin needs a bit better voice, not voice of one person. It doesn't have to be one person. It doesn't have to be Brian Armstrong, who is the founder of Coinbase. He just thinks how to pump more coins on his platform, because more he sells, more he buys, or people buy and sell, the more money he makes in commissions, right? That's his business. And God bless. I mean, that's his business. Great, right? But if there is this thinking that Bitcoin is an asset class for the people by the people, then we kind of have to kind of treat it as such. Instead, and you may be one of them, people start kind of following Saylor as he's a messiah, you know, as he's like the third coming of Jesus or second coming, you know, but he's not.
I agree with you. I think we need a better Bitcoin marketing team. We need more 100%. Of them. And that's why my whole idea is we need more Bitcoin podcasts. We need more people like you. Right.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes. We need more people to come out and talk. And that's my whole goal of this show, is to reach regular people who are not watching all the finance shows and watching all the tech shows. I want to get out there and get to the people that Satoshi made this money for.
Exactly.
And there needs to be more people talking about this and reaching outside and showing people, because no matter what happens with Saylor or what happens with these treasury companies or what happens with the governments, people need decentralized currency like Bitcoin. 100%. That is unchangeable.
Balanced system. There should be something else. You need to know there is something else.
Right.
And the government needs to know there's something else, because if the government doesn't have checks and balances, it chokes you.
Right. Yes. So this is something that's, you know, a lot of us call it freedom money, but that's why we speak. That's why we do these things. That's why we're out here making these podcasts, reaching people. And this is literally such an incredible conversation. And it's so great that we're able to get back to what Bitcoin is. You know, it's like you're doing the things, you know, your compute and your data center, it's Bitcoin. It's also AI. It's the way of the future. You're forward thinking, but you're also thinking that you're not buying into the stock stuff, even though you also know as an investor investing in S&P, there are things you can do. Go, you know, what's best for you, but you're also Bitcoin and you understand what Bitcoin is and who it's for. And it's not meant for, you know, just a huge company to own it all. And when things do go south for companies, if they do go south, trying to do all this financial engineering, the people that need Bitcoin will always be there, and it'll keep growing just like it always has.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you. And I hope that more people actually do dive in Bitcoin, read the white paper, understand the fundamentals of this technology and why it exists. Bitcoin is not crypto. Well, it's not crypto in that sense and form that we think about it. It is a decentralized money, decentralized asset. The fundamentals haven't changed.
Thank you so much, Sergey. Thank you for joining me, and thank you for being a voice of reason in the Bitcoin space and a good leader that we need, and somebody that is out here speaking and teaching people about Bitcoin and this entire future that we are living through. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate your kind words.
Yes. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.